T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Look alive! It's showtime!
Now live from the Bryant and Stratton College Athletic Studios, it's Chuck and Winkler on The Fan.
So shut up and listen.
Doors open in 3, 2, 1.
Yeah, it's a holiday week and we're talking Packers football. We're talking Bucks basketball as well. Radio.com Sports. NBA insider Rick Bucher joins us in about a half hour. Find out how good the Bucks are from a national perspective. Stick around for that. But right now, Tim Allen, Ryan Horvath in for Chuck and Bart. Chuck and Winkler served up by Perkins in the Bryant and Stratton College Athletic Studios. Talking about Aaron Rodgers in specifics. A conversation that I was not looking forward to. But I think in looking at some of these numbers for Aaron Rodgers, it had to be done. And it's not Aaron. We're not used to these types of numbers with Aaron Rodgers, ranked 16th around the league. There's some quarterbacks that are surprisingly above him in a lot of statistical categories. We see yards passing, the other night, obviously, a career low, just over 100. You had 161 earlier this year. You had a bunch in the lower 200s in yards passing. So that begs the conversation and question. Is it because of the new offense? Is it because of lack of weapons? Or is it because of that, little bit of aging going on? I mean, let's face it. He was drafted in what, 05?
Yeah, I mean, he said it last year. He's like, you know, you're starting to get old when you look around the locker room and you're the last one. Like,
yeah.
It was kind of sad to see Randall Cobb go, Jordy Nelson go, all these guys, even Clay Matthews, who struggled last night for the Rams. But it's just, yeah, Rodgers is the old man in the locker room. Wow. Him and Mason Crosby. And then, of course, Tremont Williams, who's on his second stint here in Green Bay.
It's tough, tough, tough. And Jason, you're next in West Allis there. You're on with Tim and Ryan in for the boys.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
So yeah, I think it was last KJ kind of stole my thunder a little bit. I think it's a little bit of everything. You've got like a perfect storm of an aging quarterback, a total lack of weapons to throw to. I don't think Rodgers has ever had a worse like 2 through 5 and tight end group than he has this year, outside of Devontae. You've got a new offense. You've got a brand new head coach who's never had been a head coach before anywhere. And so all these things coming together, and yeah, he's getting older. He's been in one basically same system his whole career, and you put all those things together, and it's not surprising that he's having a down year. You know, there's so many different factors. I don't think it's at all one of them. I think
which would be more than the other two, though.
I think it's honestly probably the personnel around him. I don't think he's ever had as bad of a 2 through 5, 2 through 6, add the tight ends, 2 through 7 or 8 guys to throw to.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. Jason, thanks for the call. I am with you on that. I do believe it's the personnel, and I've thought it's been the personnel for a couple of years now. It's just amazing to me that other teams can justify their roster around their weapons, but yet Green Bay refused to do that. Mm-hmm. And it just wasn't with LaFleur. It's going back a couple of years. We saw this coming. So they tried to remedy that with the draft of EQ and MVS and Jamon Moore, and they attempted it. It's when I hear the term aging quarterback, it is extremely tough and difficult for me to handle that in these parts.
Well, it really is, but and if you look at like some instances of aging quarterbacks, right? Like Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl as an aging quarterback
because
the Broncos were like, "Hey, he's not Peyton Manning of 2002 anymore. Let's surround him with a defense and a running game," right? Like the Saints, Drew Brees had a 3-year stint where New Orleans missed the playoffs, and like people were calling for the head of Sean Payton, who's a top five NFL coach as well. And then what they did was they rechanged that whole offense, and now Drew Brees drops back only 22 to 25 times per game. He's getting rid of the ball quickly. They're utilizing the two-back system and the tight ends. Like, they changed things around for these guys. That's why I was excited for Matt LaFleur to come in. And for a couple weeks, it looked like it was working. Now we're back to square one in the Mike McCarthy offense, where it's rely on Rodgers to drop back 35 times and save you.
But if you have some veteran guys that know what it takes, that can read the defense like a quarterback.
Randall Cobb. quarterbacks.
Yeah, well,
right. I thought you meant at the receiver position. If you had some vets that that know how to run some routes.
Like, that's exactly what I'm saying.
I wanted to lose my mind, and I'm trying not to get angry today over this Packers loss. I've moved on. I'm over it. But I lose my mind when I see MVS running like a 45 to 50 yard route streak down the field when you know Aaron Rodgers isn't throwing you that ball. Like, run a real route. Like, right. What are these guys doing? And then they show like the coverage, right? Like on these coverage sacks for Aaron Rodgers. And you look, and it's the same thing. Geronimo Allison. Like, they're not running slants. They don't run any crossing routes. Jimmy Graham is old. It's about time. I want to see what some of these other guys have to offer. I mean, Mercedes Lewis, also old. You know, Robert Tonyan, not sold on him as well. But
Lewis,
like, let's see Sternberger.
He's been known to be a decent red zone target.
And they don't use him as that. They use him as an extra blocker. He's a glorified tackle.
Agreed. 799-1250 to the south side. Good morning, Mike. You're on the Fan, Chuck and Winkler. They're off today, Tim and Ryan.
Good morning, guys. I was telling your screener, I want to put a positive spin on this, guys. I mean, yeah, quarterback's age, but there is no substitute for wisdom and experience in the NFL. Having said that, I don't think Rodgers has lost that much considering. The problem is, look, Green Bay is a very small market team. They pay a lot of money for certain players, and they just don't have enough to get the marquee players or weapons that Rodgers needs. And I think that if they were really all in, they'd be a little more aggressive either in drafting or going after some key free agents that could benefit. Now, I think that the team speed and the talent is horrible on offense and defensive lines. I don't care what quarterback you put behind our line, especially with the last couple West Coast losses. They would do horrible. We didn't move the chains. We hurt ourselves with penalties. We were beating ourselves a little bit. They beat us, not taking anything away from the Chargers or the Niners. And then you're playing against the clock in the fourth quarter. So you've got three things here that are going to equal a loss because the mental mistakes, you know, we all know what they are. But I think that the problem is the offensive lines, the defensive lines, and the depth within those two things. Those are key things.
Sure.
Rodgers still has a lot of gas left in the tank. However, I do feel that right now our future quarterback, as we speak, is either playing in high school or college right now. And by the time we get something and we have him drafted and to replace Rodgers, time will tell with that too. But like
I said, just real quick, Mike, what if you have to pick one, the numbers for Aaron Rodgers this season is because of a new offense, weapons around him or lack thereof, or aging quarterback?
Age will play a part, and I will agree with you, but I also think it's like this last couple previous callers said, it's a variable of things, but they have to address that in the off season. Right now, I think we're doing well, but I think for us to be not a good, better, or a great, great team, we have to have more balance in offense, defense, and special teams with better players. Otherwise, all these players we have right now, they wouldn't even be second, third string. Some of them wouldn't even be playing in the NFL, but Packers are kind of conservative and cheap, I hate to say that, when they need to get the right players. If you're all in, you're all in.
Yep. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mike. Tough to see how difficult this is, but I understand it's the ingredients here are all three, but I'm trying to pin you down to picking one, which is more prevalent. So we see numbers from Aaron Rodgers that are just not like him. I'm not saying it's him. I'm clearly the number one on my list is lack of weapons around him.
So last year was brutal, and last year, I mean, we really took a deep dive because the Packers finished 6-9-1 and missed out on the playoffs for the second consecutive season. But do you think that Aaron Rodgers has improved under Matt LaFleur, or do you think he's about the same as he was last year with Mike McCarthy? I think that's a good question right there, because he showed some glimpses. I mean, 3 weeks ago, I did a show where my main topic was, should Aaron Rodgers be in the MVP consideration? And I wasn't the only one talking about it, man. Everybody was. Mike Florio, who hates Aaron Rodgers from Pro Football Talk, he even said, Aaron Rodgers, if I'm voting today, he might be my MVP because he bought into this offense, and this Packers team is good, and it's because of him buying in. Now we're talking about, like, wow, you just threw for 100-something yards only and 30 attempts? Like, that's embarrassing. So, do you think so? Do you think that you've seen improvement under Matt LaFleur? Do you think it's about the same as he was with Mike McCarthy?
I think roughly the same, and, okay. And it's the same for me. The top of the list last year was, hell, last year, it wasn't but a year and a half ago, I was saying, sign Jeremy Maclin, please.
Right.
Any veteran, even if there's only 60% fuel left in that tank, get a veteran wide receiver in the landscape here.
Let me go really crazy here. Would you sign Antonio Brown? I would.
In a heart.
I would too, man. I mean, because what's going to happen is in 2 weeks, he's going to return to the Patriots. They're going to find a way to bring him back.
Don't get me wrong. Dude's a knucklehead, and he can go sideways on you. But you notice there's certain organizations that will, so it's not that out of line.
The organizations that win will. I mean, even taking a chance on a guy that's a little bit past his prime, like an Emmanuel Sanders.
With Seattle.
Right, Josh Gordon. With Seattle. And before Seattle, with New England. Like, Bill Belichick, it's kind of like just some coaches can do that, right? Like, Bill Belichick can do that. Randy Moss was a little bit of a troubled, I don't know, had a troubled ego or whatever you want to call what he had going on in Oakland and in Minnesota. And then Bill Belichick took a shot with him, and he set all these records,
Patriots,
the touchdown reception record. They went undefeated.
They stick to their guns. Mm-hmm. You're going to do it our way. You're going to be a system guy. You're going to be a team player. You're going to follow the rules or you're gone.
And
Josh Gordon, out.
Yeah.
Antonio Brown, out.
And I feel like guys respect Aaron Rodgers. Like, among his peers, I know that, you know, not all the fans love Aaron Rodgers and some think he may have a big ego, but if you listen to his peers talk about him, guys on the defensive side of the ball, everybody loves Aaron Rodgers for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Antonio Brown, like, if Matt LaFleur is the head coach we want him to be, he should be able to bring in a guy and say, hey.
If you're Allen Hurns, you wouldn't want to play with Aaron Rodgers?
I'd call Dez Bryant, all right? And I know that sounds crazy, and I know Dez had that injury last year, because the Saints, again, who took a shot on Dez Bryant last year? The Saints. Like, teams that are winning want to get better, even if they have weapons. Like, the Saints have weapons. Michael Thomas caught 10 balls again.
He's amazing.
He's the best receiver in the league. They keep finding ways to surround Drew Brees with more weapons because they know he's in his mid-30s, late-30s, and they want to keep him. You know, they want to keep the ball moving around a little bit there. That's what I'm saying. I would give Dez Bryant a call. He said it a couple weeks back. He said, look, I know I'm not a superstar anymore, but I do think I could be a difference maker, and I just think that I still could play football. I want to just make a contribution to a team. That right there, like, give the guy a shot. What do you have to lose? What do you really have to lose? You don't have to give him $8 million. You're going to get him on a vet minimum.
One of the tougher conversations you're going to have here, and that is looking at the numbers for Aaron Rodgers. Are they down because of a new offense? Because of lack of weapons around him? Or is it just because he's, well, I'm no expert, but as the years go by, you tend to get older?
We all do. A little gray in the beard.
That sucks. But is it because of an aging situation for him? I say it's lack of weapons. What's your top? We'll get to that next year. 799-1250, Chuck and Winkler, Tim Allen, Ryan Horvath in for Chuck and Bart here on The Fan.
You know, we were just pretty bad in the passing game tonight. I don't think it had anything to do with Tay. You know, we're going to try and get him his touches. But, you know, when you go 0 for 13 or whatever on third down, when I was in there, it's not going to get it done.
There's Aaron Rodgers after the game on Sunday night. Welcome back, Chuck and Winkler. The boys are off today. A couple of things going on here. Tim Allen and Ryan Horvath in for the guys. Holiday week, so they're off. That being said, we love, and we know you love, Chuck and Bart. Who do you like more and why? We'll put that up on Facebook and Twitter at 105.7 FM The Fan. And also Aaron Rodgers' conversation, in specific, Aaron Rodgers himself. The numbers are down. We all know that. 2,800 yards passing. It'll be, 18? Yeah, 18 touchdowns. Just the two picks, so that's good.
He's never going to turn the ball over.
No, and I like that. A couple of fumbles, as one we saw on Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're getting your brains beat in with that kind of pass rush, you sort of understand that.
Right.
But why are the numbers down? New offense, lack of weapons, or that word, aging, and we all get there at some point. All quarterbacks do. It's just the fact of life. We get it. 799-1250. TJ, you're next on the Fan. Good morning.
Morning, boys. I was originally going to say players, but then Horvath mentioned, you know, Drew Brees and the Saints and how they do things over there, and it got me to thinking that, you know, this Packer team is almost identical to that Saints team in the sense that we have an older quarterback, we have one really solid receiver, and, you know, Devontae Adams I don't think is even on the same level as Thomas over there, but he's close. But who's the Saints' second guy? Ted Ginn Jr., he doesn't do a whole lot of anything. And it's almost like our second guy. We got two good running backs, just like they got two good running backs. And it's like, I think it's more the system than it is the players, because the Saints still find a way to win. It's just like this last game when you're sending out three or maybe four guys against seven, you know, defenders out there, not counting the four linemen that are rushing you. You know, you're trying to get four guys open with seven people covering them. It's almost impossible. You gotta almost pack it in there, two tight ends, and just run it down their throat. You, almost like I think Seattle did that.
Yeah, we're not used to that. We are definitely not used to that.
But
and you're right.
You got the players to do it, though.
The one thing that the Saints have that we don't.
Thank you. Two great points. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. The one thing that the Saints have that the Packers should still have is Jared Cook as a tight end and not Jimmy Graham, because I'll tell you, he could still play. I don't understand that move of not bringing Jared Cook back years ago.
I agree. Now he's a great point in terms of the New Orleans Saints.
Mm-hmm.
Couple of great backs. The tight ends there. Yeah, that's a little bit of a difference here. The stud receivers there, yes. But Tre'Quan Smith and Ted Ginn Jr.?
Ted Ginn Jr. has been in the league for like 15 years, hasn't he? And there's another guy that he runs one route.
And Seattle's his other example, that when they had the personnel or they didn't at wide receiver, if you think back to those days when it was ground and pound.
Yeah.
And then when you're down, when you're against the clock, Russell Wilson, let him work his magic. Ah, two good points.
Yeah.
So it may be the system, at least according to TJ it is.
Right, and just, I mean, and I know Russell Wilson's still a little bit younger than Aaron Rodgers, but, I mean, that's a great point right there just with Seattle. He loses his best receiver. Doug Baldwin decides to retire just a couple weeks before the season. You kind of saw it coming because of the injuries, but Russell Wilson can make anybody a superstar. 6-7 years ago, Aaron Rodgers can make anybody a superstar. I just feel now he needs some help. He's getting older. As we get older, we all need a little help, right? Like, there's a reason why my grandparents moved in with my aunt, and they live with my aunt right now. They got a little older. They don't want my grandpa on the roof anymore and cutting his own grass. Like, we all need more help as we get older. It's
Grandpa,
just life.
You're 83. You can't clean the gutters anymore.
You can't pound a case of Budweiser. And
let's go to Wauwatosa. Willie felt the need to call the Chuck and Winkler Show. Good morning, Willie.
Good morning.
What's up, buddy?
What do you think?
I think it's the personnel. I mean, you look at Aaron Rodgers, those games that you're talking about, the Charger game, the 49er game, even the Viking games and the Bear game in the beginning of the season. It's hard for any quarterback. I don't care if you're Brady, Brees, whoever, unless you're Lamar Jackson, who can run away from everyone.
Mm-hmm.
He's snapping the ball, and there's three people in his face before he even sets up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's not just wide receiver personnel.
Right, he can't even see the field.
It's offensive line. Yeah.
They're not blitzing him. They're sending four people, and you're dropping seven. In the past, to beat Aaron Rodgers, defensive coordinators had to gamble. They used to blitz.
Great point.
And he would kill those blitzes.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's only getting a four-man rush. But you only got one guy who can get off the route, and that's Devontae Adams.
Yep.
The other three guys that's out there, they're just out there. And they can't get open. So when he gets his quick looks, he can't just pop, because there's three people in his face and no one's open.
Yeah, Willie, great point. Yep, and I agree with that. And maybe that's why they should get creative, LaFleur should. Get Aaron Jones in that slot more.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a great point right there from Willie, too, that I don't even think we brought up, is they're not even blitzing Aaron Rodgers anymore. You don't even have to blitz him.
Yeah, there was a four-man front almost all night
and
on Sunday night.
In San Fran's four-man front. I mean, that's how they built their football team. But again, you're doing it like no D4. That's your best pass rusher, your second best pass rusher.
Willie, by the way, calling from the library. He had to be
Good morning, guys.
He had a great radio. That was like the ladies' man radio voice, right?
Yeah. You're on the smooth jazz.
Yes. He needs to be in this business, for
Absolutely.
Sure. 799-1250 to Tosa. Good morning, Tim.
Morning, guys. I really think it's a combination of things. It's everything. You can't say that it's Rodgers. You can't say that it's personal.
But what is it more of?
I'm going to put more of the blame on... I'm just going to skew the scale a little bit to Aaron Rodgers. Now, for as bad or inconsistent as Geronimo has been and MVS and just other players as a whole, you have all seen the same thing I have. You've seen Rodgers errantly throw also. So there's both sides of that coin. He is not a perfect passer anymore. The thing that it comes back to me with the San Francisco game is – they just were woefully unprepared for that game. You knew that their front four were beasts, and all they could do is drop back and cover your receivers. Why are we running 25 yards down the field? Quick hitters get 4, 5, 6, 7 yards, keep their defense tired because they're not getting to Aaron Rodgers. They threw Aaron Jones one pass, one target.
Yep.
Ridiculous. And I put that game plan on LaFleur, but it's just like, you look at the game and you can see the script already playing out. It's like, how did you become so underprepared for a team that you knew was going to dominate and do what they did? They didn't do anything different that they haven't done for 9 or 10 other games. And it's like, we got schooled. Now, two tight end sets. Sorry, Jimmy, you're going to have to stay in and block because of their beast pass rush. Mm-hmm. And you get creative, and it's just, I'm not a rocket scientist, but you can sit back in the couch and look at that and go, why would they just depend on their mostly consistent, and I give them a solid B across the line. As far as the offensive line goes, they've got solid guys, but when you come up against those four pass rushers that are just, they're in the prime and they're young and they're hungry, they did nothing to help Aaron Rodgers with stunts or blocks. Two tight end sets to get that extra block in there to let Jones spread out and get a pass. Or it's like, come on, LaFleur. I mean, I know he's young, but those are the things that frustrate out.
Yeah.
Aaron throws, you gotta take some of his age. And Aaron has been doing this so long that he is ingrained in Aaron's way to his own fault, and that sucks. Now, in last season, I feel like there's going to be a huge cleaning of the cabinet. There's going to be a bunch of guys that just were done with you. We've seen what this kind of let's build you up. It's clear that Geronimo and MDS are not the guys.
Yep.
It's still out with Lazzy. But thanks, guys.
You got it.
Great point right there. And not only that's what made me so mad yesterday, Tim. I'm fine dealing with a loss, man. But when you have 13 days to prepare for a team, like what the hell were they doing on their bye week that they were that unprepared? You knew what San Francisco was going
to
do.
So this is somewhat surprising to me, this conversation. That I thought when we decided to go with this conversation, I really thought that Rodgers was aging was going to be toward the top of that list.
Mm-hmm.
I actually did, just based on me, you know, working here, listening here, there's been some criticism about Aaron Rodgers the last couple of years. So I thought, let's go ahead and talk about this. It needs to be talked about because the numbers just screamed at me.
Yeah.
But it surprises me.
The response?
Yeah, it does. It does. I'm pleased with it, actually.
I you know, same here, especially people that realize that he doesn't have a whole lot of time to make these decisions. People that realize the personnel isn't the same as some of these other teams that we're talking about in the NFC, like the Saints. You know, they don't have the same playmakers. They don't put the same speed on the field. Like, that's the thing. We hear about all the speed that MVS has. When is it going to start showing on the field? We heard it all offseason. MVS worked out with Randy Moss. What did he learn? How to run in the back of the end? Like, what did he learn?
Break the route off, come back to the football, play a little playground football because you know you've got number 12 back there.
Right.
That's his style. That's how he has become a Hall of Famer, guys. And that's what's, I don't know, disappointing to me a little bit in that they really sort of overrated their weapons. And I got nothing personally against these guys. You know that.
Right. No, neither do I. I just want to win. I want to see my favorite team win a Super Bowl.
I want to see Aaron Rodgers
succeed. Put up some numbers.
Yeah.
Right.
799-1250. A couple of more minutes left if you want to jump in here. Which is more prevalent in your world? Why the numbers are down for Aaron Rodgers? Is it because of an aging quarterback situation? Personnel That is at the top of the list for me. Or the new offense implemented by Matt LaFleur. More next here on The Fan. Welcome back. It's Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries here in the Bryan Stratton College Athletic Studios. Tim Allen, Ryan Horvath, holiday week. That means guys are off, and we're talking about them, Chuck and Bart.
We're ripping on them. Although we love them.
We know you guys love them, too, and that's our poll question. Who do you like more, Chuck or Bart, and why? Check it out on social media, Facebook and Twitter at 105.7 FM The Fan, and talking about Aaron Rodgers and the numbers. They are 8-3, and we do understand that. But the bar is a little bit higher in these parts when you have a Hall of Fame quarterback. So the numbers are down, and we're trying to figure out, according to you guys, why new offense, aging quarterback situation, or lack of weapons. We'll squeeze in a couple of more here to Brookfield. We say hello to Matt. Matt, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, you know, we always talk about weapons for Aaron Rodgers being receivers. I mean, with him being an aging quarterback who relies on time in the pocket to do what Aaron Rodgers does, he needs a tackle that will protect him, or tackles that will protect him. You know, Bulaga's better days are behind him. We saw that on Sunday night, and they need to think seriously about drafting and developing a high draft pick that can take over and help provide the kind of support that he's going to need to do what he does. And, so that's what I'm thinking. And you know, the other teams in the league are responding to the fact that this is a pass-happy league, and they're developing, you know, front fours that are putting tremendous pressure. So you got to counter that with a good draft pick in terms of linemen and specifically tackles.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you, and it's not going to surprise me when that occurs.
I agree, too, but you did just lock up David Bakhtiari, and you paid him all that money, so you're already paying one tackle. I mean, if you look around the league, I mean, Andrew Luck's retired now, but what the Colts did was they beat him into the ground for 5 years, and then they said, we have to protect this guy, and they went out and they drafted two offensive linemen, one of them being Quentin Nelson from Notre Dame. That you do. You need to protect your quarterback. So I wouldn't be surprised if they do reach out and try to grab another tackle. But you did just invest all that money in Bakhtiari, so you're going to have to do it through the draft.
Yeah, it won't surprise me if they beef up that O-line through the draft.
I see. And what sucks, man, is I love Brian Bulaga. And if you go back, like I did it yesterday because I'm a psychopath, and I went back and I watched him week one against Khalil Mack. He was so good in the second half of that game against Khalil Mack. Like when Bulaga's healthy, when he's right, mm-hmm. he's one of the best in the league. But with the ACL injury and the bump, like he blew out his knees, got bum knees. And yes, he's getting older. His better days are behind him. And it sucks because that's what we see with these offensive linemen all the time. I fall in love with these guys because the Packers do a great job of developing their offensive linemen. I miss Josh Sitton, but when it was time for Josh Sitton to go, it was over for him. TJ Lang.
Yeah.
Right. Like we do build up our linemen good. But yeah, it's time to start looking through the draft because I don't think any of these guys, Lucas Patrick, I don't think any of these guys are the answer.
Roger, your turn to speak on The Fan.
Yeah, first off, happy Thanksgiving to all you guys there. Might as well get that in.
Thanks,
timely.
Roger.
Sure.
Couple of things. I'm just going to rat off a couple points. Rodgers, and this is in considering an answer here, hey, listen, we got to address the fact that not too long ago they were talking about Rodgers as MVP. So, you know, the solution or answer here has to consider the fact. So, I think Rodgers, first off, is a better pre-snap reader than post-snap reactor. And that, along with age, and I think this is where age comes in, if we look at when he was at his best this year, it's not a controversy between either Aaron Jones or Devontae, but one thing he had with Jones is that he was aided, that was his first read. He was getting the ball out quickly, and after the catch, well, we know what Aaron Jones produced for us. So I think to that degree, if I have to pick one thing, if we get back to that, and getting that ball out of his hands quickly,
yep.
working Devontae into that and not giving up on what we had with Aaron Jones in that passing game, I think we can get back to where we were and we can stop talking about whether he's that far over the hill.
All right, very good.
Thanks, Raj.
Post-snap reader, I kind of liked when he played a little playground football.
Me too. Let's Let's get back to this in a little bit.
Yeah, in a little while, we will get back to this. And we'll let you chime in as well, 414-799-1250. In the meantime, we need to unload on the Milwaukee Bucks in a good way. We'll find out what the national perspective is. Radio.com Sports NBA insider Rick Bucher, he will join us next. Giannis pours in 50 last night, eighth straight victory for the Bucks, and we're talking about him next here on The Fan. We'll get back to our Packers conversation in just a little bit. Also trying to squeeze in what's going on with the Brewers. Is there anything? Hello? Hello? We'll get to that in a bit. Milwaukee Bucks last night as Giannis and company get their eighth consecutive victory. Let's hit the great Midwest Bank hotline and welcome in from Radio.com Sports NBA insider Rick Bucher.
Insider calls brought to you by the midsize mattress from Mercedes-Benz Vans. Here, Rick, on Scale and Pals, a brand new NBA podcast out now on Radio.com and the Radio.com app. All you got to do is search Scale, S-C-A-L.
Hey, Rick, thanks for the time, and let's get the national perspective about a team that is rolling. Eight consecutive victories, 14-3 marks, 17 consecutive double-doubles. For Giannis, I could go on and on. What's the national perspective? How good are the Bucks?
Well, there's certainly in the conversation for title contention once again, especially with LeBron out of the East. They're in that special place now, and living in the Bay Area, it's sort of the same as what the Golden State Warriors were the last 3-4 years, is that we're not really going to get a true temperature on who they are until we get to the postseason. They're doing what everybody would expect them to do. I can't give you the full, you know, what the buzz is among national writers, because I don't know that there's been a lot of talk about the Bucks in particular, as far as what they're doing now. They're doing what they're supposed to do. I think what's interesting is their roster is deeper, and Mike Budenholzer is getting more from more guys, and I think that makes them even more potent as a regular season team. The question is, when you shorten your roster, when you shorten your rotation in the playoffs, who is going to play, and are they going to be a better team at that point? And when the pace slows down, has Giannis developed enough below the free throw line as a playmaker to be that guy who takes them to the finals out of the East? I don't know that we're really going to get those answers until we get to April. So as of right now, certainly Giannis' three-point shooting has improved. He's an MVP candidate. But what this team is collectively going to do, I don't know that we can get a read on that, no matter how dominant they are in the regular season, just because we saw sort of the switch in the playoffs last year. The question is, are they going to be significantly different? Is Giannis going to be significantly different when we see him in the postseason this time around?
No, and that leads me to my next question, and that is, you know, we're seeing maybe a little bit of a morphing in the NBA to the big three into the 1-2 punch around the league. And the Bucks, I mean, some would argue they don't even have the 1-2 punch, let alone the big three.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. It really comes down to if you take away or you make things difficult on the best player on a team, where do you turn to next? And can that guy get it done? And you could make the case when you look at Toronto as an example of the latest championship team. I don't know if you could identify their big three necessarily, but what they had was they had 3, 4, 5 guys under pressure who could come through. Fred VanVleet gave you some big moments. Pascal Siakam gave you some big moments. Obviously, Kawhi Leonard gave you some big moments. Kyle Lowry gave you some big moments. It really comes down to, I don't know that you necessarily need to be able to identify your big three, but you need to have those guys who are, you know, in a playoff series. Can they win you a game? Can they be that guy who knocks down the big shot? And that's going to be the question with the Bucks. Is Chris Middleton going to come through and have you, and give you that moment? And this has been the thing that's made me nervous about the Bucks ever since Malcolm Brogdon left town, because to me, Malcolm was one of those guys who gave you some big moments last year. Mm-hmm. And there's some other guys that are still on the roster that did not come through. And so as currently comprised, having been through it once, are there guys that are now going to step up this time around? Again, I wish I could be a greater prognosticator, but I'd be lying if I said that anything that a guy does in the regular season now is going to be an indicator of what he's going to be able to do in the playoffs when a team is game planning for
him. But it sure is fun to watch right now in Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And I will say this. I mean, this is like it'll be interesting to see what the referendum of winning. You know, what the team does in the playoffs. But all of this success and all that the team has done in terms of spending money and adding players and rolling through the season the way they are, if you're trying to make a case for Giannis that, hey, we can build a blockbuster team, stay. They're doing a good job of that. So there is something to be gained out of what they're doing right now in terms of building a team that has this much success during the regular season, and that's making a strong case for Giannis to stay. And before you ask, no, I haven't heard a single word about him going anyplace else.
Breaking news from Rick Bucher.
I look at him... And I haven't gotten any indication. Every time somebody's asked me that question, you know, there's usually stuff that kind of leaks out. Even a guy like Anthony Davis right now with the Lakers and all the success they've had, he's been very circumspect about, I'm going to wait until the end of the year. Giannis, I put Giannis in the Klay Thompson camp of a year ago. Klay Thompson wouldn't fully commit, but he said, this is where I want to be. And unless, you know, something dramatic changes, that's what I plan to do. I'm getting the same drumbeat from behind the scenes in terms of what Giannis's thinking is.
You're listening to Chuck and Winkler on 105.7 FM The Fan. We're on the line now with Radio.com Sports NBA insider Rick Bucher. Rick, when we take a look at the Eastern Conference, my big question today was, can anybody hang with the Bucks this season? I mean, it's 82-game season. We're still early on. What's going on right now in Philadelphia? Like, last night we see it again. Joel Embiid goes scoreless for the first time in his career. They seem like they're a little bit of a mess.
Yes. Well, and I've thought that, and I've always felt that's their Achilles heel, is I'm just not sure that Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons are fit together. And as Ben Simmons grows, Joel Embiid has had to take a little more of a back seat. Now they added Al Horford because they wanted that depth, because they had some questions about, you know, how do we keep Embiid healthy through the year? And you pay Tobias Harris. Now he's trying to demonstrate what he can do. I thought losing both Jimmy Butler and J.J. Redick were definite negatives for them in terms of their leadership, in terms of their veteran presence. And so I haven't been – I know a lot of people were high on Philadelphia as potentially the team coming out of the East. Mm-hmm. I just think it's a mixed bag, and I'm not – Ben Simmons is a strange cat for me. Has 14 assists, but only scores 10 points and has two free throws in 41 minutes. In 10, 15 years ago, you'd be satisfied with that as a point guard if you had that big other scorer. Mm-hmm. But if you look down the line, they don't have that. And if you're a point guard in the league these days, handling the ball that much with as quick as the game is played, You can't be scoring 10 points in 41 minutes. It sounds strange when a guy's getting 14 dimes, but it's not the way the game is played. And I'm not convinced that where Ben Simmons has to operate on the floor, and sometimes he's aggressive, sometimes he's not, that's ultimately going to work. I think Embiid is the best player on the team. If you ask me who I would build around, in spite of the fact that the game is so fast and it's a little harder to build around big men, I would be building around Embiid. But I don't think that their combination ultimately is going to work, whether it's now or whether it's later.
Well, the 76ers have been a disappointment at 11-6. The Celtics have kind of been the team that's caught everybody by surprise in the Eastern Conference. They're 12-4, but the Miami Heat as well, 12-4. Both teams 7-3 in their last 10 games. What have you seen from those two teams? Are they legit, or is it just early in the season and they've gotten hot?
I believe they're both legit as top five teams in the Eastern Conference. I don't think that's going to change. I'm not sold on the Celtics. I never thought of the Heat as a title contender. I still struggle to get those words out of my mouth and talking about the Heat.
Yeah.
I feel the same with the Boston Celtics. I think they're a good team. I don't think they're a great team. I'm not sure who their go-to guy is. I think most people would say it's Jason Tatum, but I've seen too many situations where he's not quite dominant enough physically that you can't make the game hard on him, and I don't think he's a playmaker in terms of if he can't get his shot, he's going to create something for somebody else. And with Kemba, I thought they overpaid, and I think you saw it the other night, I think it was against the Clippers. When he plays against length and size, which is what you're going to face when you get to the postseason, he's going to struggle. It's simply a function of his size. And so, if there's a team in the Eastern Conference that remains a threat, to me, it's the Toronto Raptors. Mm. They have the experience of having got there. I know they don't have Kawhi, but they got some young guys who continue to grow, and Siakam, and Fred VanVleet, and they have that institutional knowledge now of what it takes. And so there's no situation, certainly not during the regular season or pretty much at any point. I mean, they faced down the defending champions. They made all of the plays that they had to make to win a championship. That kind of knowledge and confidence under pressure now is just invaluable for a team. And are they not quite as talented as last year? Sure, but I'm not sure across the board in the Eastern Conference that there's anybody that's markedly more talented when it comes to playing in the playoffs. I think they're as much of a threat as anybody else. And if you said who are you taking, Boston, Miami, or Toronto, I would take Toronto.
Rick, final thing here. The NBA, I was reading a couple of different articles, and quite frankly, it got a little convoluted, so I quit on it. About the NBA changing their stance a little bit, or at least entertaining the idea of a different playoff structure, lessening the amount of games played. They've already backed off the back-to-backs over the last year or two. They've partnered up with a gambling entity. I mean, they seem to be cutting edge. Any movement in that? Are we going to see a landscape change?
Well, it will be interesting if we see. I think eventually we will. How dramatic it will be is the question. I know there is some healthy resistance to making some of the sweeping changes that they'd like to make. This is really a reaction to the fact that the overall viewership in the U.S. is down for TNT and ESPN. I'm just not sure that that's how we should be viewing the health of the league. I mean, here's the reality, and I learned this years ago going to the NBA offices, is that for the longest time, we've done this as sports fans. we gauge the health of a league based on what? TV ratings and attendance.
Sure.
And what I learned going into the NBA offices is that they have about a dozen revenue streams, and that they judge how healthy they are and how successful they are based on selling licensing rights, selling merchandise, reaching audiences that are never going to actually see or attend an NBA game. And so I know they're doing this. I think they're doing it to placate their broadcast partners. But there's a reason we got into that whole China mess, because when you look at international rights and you look at their trying to maintain their global reach, that's the secret sauce for the NBA. That's what the NBA has that Major League Baseball does not, that the NFL does not, and that's where they can continue to grow and make money. The fact is that NBA fans, yeah, you may lose a few in the U.S., but I believe it's as much. The NBA owns more of the sports landscape in terms of what we talk about and how much social media attention they get. Yeah. I just think we're in an age where we have an up and coming audience that really loves the NBA, but they don't watch games. They watch highlights. They talk about it on social media. They'll buy a jersey, but they're not necessarily going to buy a league pass, or they're going to spend 2.5 hours sitting down to watch a game. And I don't know that changing the schedule or making an in-season tournament or doing any of these things, it may cause a certain bump, but it's not. I think the consumer, and I think the way the audience consumes sports has just changed. I don't know that for the NBA in particular, unless you take it down to like 60 games, 66 games, where every single game is vital, maybe that's it. But they're talking about reducing it by a few games and then trying to increase the value or the meaning of each game. And I just think that that's a lot of games. That's a lot of games for anybody to sit down. People are more interested in talking about who's going to team up with who next summer and who's the number one draft pick going to be than they are about actually sitting down and talking about the game itself.
Yeah, four games, I don't know if it's going to make that big of a difference.
You can't see it.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate the fact that the NBA is willing to take some risks, too, as a professional association. I mean, I like that a lot. And internationally, I think it probably has the best chance over football and baseball. I agree with you, to have some pretty decent success. Rick, I appreciate it, man. Great stuff. And we'll talk again, all right?
Sounds good.
All right, guys. There he is, Rick Bucher, NBA Insider, Radio.com Sports.
Yeah, Insider Call is brought to you by the Midsize Metrics from Mercedes-Benz Vans. You can hear Rick on Scaling Pals, which is a brand-new NBA podcast that's out now on Radio.com and the Radio.com app. All you got to do is search Scal, S-C-A-L. And he joined us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019. Look no further and call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local, common sense lending to your community since 1935. And Rick, actually, he joined us in the spot where Eric Name usually joins us. Name's going to pop on next at 9 a.m. So we get a double dose of Bucks basketball, too.
Absolutely. And we'll get the local scoop as well. Eric Name will join us in just a couple of minutes. Starting Monday, we've been waiting for this all year long. And it is a lot of fun, and it's very rewarding. As Children's Hospital of Wisconsin and Robin's Nest, the recipients of the 13th annual Fan Toy Drive at Blaine's Farm and Fleet in Oak Creek. We start Monday. That's this show. Chuck and Winkler, Chuck and Bart will be out at Blaine's Farm and Fleet, as well as Bill Michaels, as well as the Wendy's Big Show. And on Tuesday, Hot Stove Weekly fires up as always. That's our
nice
kickoff of the hot stove season. That'll be all coming up starting Monday. Monday through Friday, got all week. Donate a toy or cash to Children's Wisconsin and Robin's Nest. feel good about yourself, and I cannot wait for this.
Yeah, thanks to Bayview Shade and Blind Annex Wealth Management. I'm pretty excited as well. Great cause. Makes me appreciate the holiday season because I don't really get into the holidays. I mean, I do now. Christmas I like because I have a six-year-old. He gets excited. Love watching him open presents, but I was kind of a Scrooge the decade before, so I like things like this.
Absolutely. And if you really stay close to Twitter and Facebook and stay close to the fan in terms of listening, when we do have guests down at Blaine's Farm and Fleet, you can get down there and see them in person. Yeah, Craig Council has been down there. We've had some really, really big-time guests down there at Blaine's Farm and Fleet, Oak Creek. The Toy Drive, looking forward to that Monday. Looking forward to some more conversation. Milwaukee Bucks, they get a huge win last night. They're all big, right? When you're on a roll, you want to continue at 8 straight, and Giannis pours in 50. We'll talk next here on The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.